This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Welcome to this episode of the TriDot Podcast. Interesting topic today, and so I'm glad you've joined us for it. Many, many times on the podcast, on our nutrition episodes in particular, we've talked about nutrition tracking apps such as Chronometer and MyFitnessPal, and they've just come up in conversation on these episodes. And today, we'll be talking about how to make the most out of these great tools at our disposal. Our key guide to the nutrition world is our resident nutritional expert, Dr. Krista Austin. Krista is an exercise physiologist and nutritionist who consulted with the U.S. Olympic Committee and the English Institute of Sport. She has a PhD in exercise physiology and sports nutrition, a master's degree in exercise physiology, and is a certified strength and conditioning specialist. Krista, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me again. I'm glad we get to dive into this a little bit deeper today.
Also joining us is pro triathlete and coach Elizabeth James. Elizabeth came to the sport from a soccer background and quickly rose through the triathlon ranks using TriDot, from a beginner to top age grouper to professional triathlete. She's a Kona and Boston Marathon qualifier who has coached triathletes with TriDot since 2014. Elizabeth, thanks for coming on.
Always my pleasure, Andrew. I'm excited to be here.
And who am I? I am your host, Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people, and captain of the middle of the pack. Today, we'll get going with a warm-up question before moving on to our nutritionally helpful main set. Then we'll cool down with a question for Dr. Austin from a TriDot podcast listener. It's going to be a great show. Let's get to it.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
Everyone loves going to the movies, and a staple of the movie-going experience are movie snacks. Now today, of course, we are talking about tracking our calories, so assuming, of course, you are heading to the theater to treat yourself, and you are not going to log those snacks into your tracker for the day, what is your go-to movie snack to treat yourself to? Dr. Austin, we'll start with you.
You know, I can't remember exactly what they call it, but it's this popcorn where it's got different types of chocolate over caramel popcorn.
Ooh.
Yeah. That's my treat when I decide to have something at the movie theaters. I can't remember what they call it, though.
So that's like hitting your because you know the popcorn is kind of the salty, and then but you also put your chocolate on it. So it's just hitting like multiple like pleasure cravings all at once, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, it's hard to argue with that, Elizabeth. But what is your pick? Is your pick something different?
Wow, yeah. I mean, I was going to say that I'm all for the snacks, and I absolutely love sweets, but that your typical movie theater treats like the popcorn and the candies don't have much appeal for me.
Really?
But what Dr. Austin was talking about with, you know,
would
like
appeal to you?
Chocolate drizzled popcorn. I'm second guessing. I'm like, that sounds good. I've also heard there's like some fancier movie theaters that have more of like a menu and the possibility to order a milkshake or get a bowl of ice cream. So I'm thinking that sounds good, but I have to find the right place to go.
I will tell you, Elizabeth, that 1.8 miles from my house, and I know this thanks to my runs on Strava, of course, there is a movie theater called Movie House and Eatery that is one of those movie theaters that has full-on meals, quality food, made in a kitchen with actual chefs and not warmed up somewhere. And they have milkshakes and Caesar salads and all sorts of stuff. And so the first time I went there, I ordered a Caesar salad thinking, you know, like we went there, we're like, oh, this is great. They have actual legit food. We'll watch a movie. We'll have our dinner. We'll do the dinner and a movie date without having to go to two separate places.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ordered the Caesar salad and it was delicious. But if you've ever tried eating a Caesar salad in the dark, it is very difficult because you're trying to bring the fork to your mouth and you're not exactly, I mean, salad is a weird shape, right? Every bite's a little bit different. You know, it was hard to figure out if I was actually getting any chicken or croutons in a particular bite because I couldn't actually see the dish. So it was challenging. So if you go to the movie house and eatery, I do recommend you get a milkshake and not a salad,
and not the salad.
Because it's just going to be a little bit easier to take in. But for me, I really just like the classic popcorn. Even days we go to a movie and my wife wants to get some, and if I'm like, I'm not really feeling it, you know, just get a small, I always end up eating popcorn even when I don't think I'm going to be in the mood for it. So now I've just accepted that and we always get it. The other treat that I've really been enjoying from the movie house and eatery that I talked about is they have their own brand of gummy bears. And I don't know, I really like those. It's a nice little sweet, chewy treat. But if you've had gummy bears, you know, they're not, you know, they're not easy to eat a ton of them. You know, you can have just a few of them and kind of get that candy feel without having a ton of candy. And I don't know, I just really like them. So we're going to throw this question out to all of you in our podcast listening lands, because I know for a fact that we have omitted one of your favorite treats. And some of you guys are athletes are just, you just have to go to bat for your snow caps or your bunch of crunch or whatever it is you enjoy at the movie theater. And so we're going to throw this out on our Facebook group, the I Am Trot Facebook group. And we're going to ask you to see what movie snack you like to indulge on when you head down to the cinema.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
Our main set today is brought to you by our good friends at UCAN. Here at TriDot, we are huge believers in using UCAN to fuel our training and racing. In the crowded field of nutrition companies, what separates UCAN from the pack is the science behind their superstarch, the key ingredient in UCAN products. While most energy powders are filled with sugar or stimulants that cause a spike or crash, UCAN energy powders, powered by superstarch, deliver a steady release of complex carbs to give you stable blood sugar and provide long-lasting energy. UCAN also offers tasty and refreshing hydration mixes and energy bars for when you are on the go. When I was new to UCAN, my first purchase was their perfectly named Tri-Starter Pack. It's the best way to discover what superstarch-powered UCAN products are best for you. So head to their website, generationucan.com, and use the code TRIDOT to save 15% on your entire order. The famous saying is you are what you eat, and it only takes one time of eating an Oreo cookie before training and then feeling like an Oreo cookie the entire workout to understand the truth to this age-old phrase. Tracking our nutrition is a great way to make sure we are fueling properly day-to-day and having accountability for everything we consume in our day. Dr. Austin several times has referenced nutrition tracking apps in her time on the podcast, and with more and more athletes getting on board, we decided a conversation about the nuances of nutrition tracking would be a great one to have. So, Dr. Austin, I think we would all acknowledge that tracking our nutrition, you know, what we're putting into our bodies, is a good thing. But maybe expound for us as a professional on the why. Why is tracking our food intake so beneficial?
The biggest thing about being able to track our food intake and really break it down based on the micronutrients and quality of our macronutrients is that it's going to provide insight as to the quality of what you're actually eating. You know, calories are not always the greatest indicator of whether or not we're doing right by our health and also our performance. And so at the end of the day, I try to encourage people to take at least one snapshot of 3 to 7 days where they take a good look at what they actually fuel their bodies with prior to engaging in any training, you know, cycle, or even before they start to go in and make changes to their nutrition program. The other thing it helps many people do is to hold them accountable in how they implement their actual behavioral change. So the big thing about nutrition is that it's really a behavioral health aspect that you have to want to take on board. And so if you don't have objective feedback, oftentimes it's very difficult to hold yourself to it. And so I think that's some of the benefits we can always see outside of just the standard energy in, energy out, when it's used appropriately. However, I will say that it's not something that is for all athletes.
I'm really glad that you brought up that last point there. For me personally, I guess I'd just like to kind of interject and add that I'll track my nutrition periodically, but not all the time. And in fact, this is something that I honestly have to be very mindful and careful about, because it has become a negative thing for me in the past, creating kind of this hyper focus and then somewhat negative attitude toward food and fueling. I mean, you've mentioned some of these fantastic benefits from tracking, and to all of those, I agree, and I encourage my athletes to do that as well. But if you could just kind of maybe expand on if or when this could become more of a negative than a positive for an athlete, or something that might not be appropriate for them, I think that would be great too.
Yeah, I think for a lot of athletes, what we have to be cognizant of first and foremost is the context in which we're putting the whole concept of tracking our food. And so I'll give you an example of one athlete I've worked with over the years that when she was first asked to track her food, it was because her coach thought she needed to lose weight and lean up. And so the process in and of itself was purely about body weight and composition. It wasn't focused on performance. It wasn't focused on her health. And she ended up being asked to go to some real extremes and to track every single day for a very unhealthy purpose. And so I think we always have to sit back and say, what is the context in which we're doing it? And know that some people can take a snapshot. They'd rather develop patterns and learn the patterns and then put the tracker away, and that's absolutely okay. And even with some of my clients, they'll just say, hey, Krista, I've had a bad experience with tracking my food. Can you do the assessment any other way? And I actually just have them take pictures of what they're eating. And then I do it on the back end so that they don't sit there and look at numbers. And we use a far more qualitative approach typically towards working on their nutrition habits, or just implementing small things like hydration, or, you know, a couple servings of fruit into a fruit bowl that they snack on during the day to help them, you know, redirect and work on their nutritional intake rather than being too obsessed with the numbers. And so if it's in the right context, it's a good thing. But if it's ever placed in the wrong context, that's when we have to be careful, because it can actually send athletes down a very wrong road, which is becoming too obsessed with body weight, body composition, or just, you know, how clean can they eat even. So a good point that we should always put it into the right context and not be doing it in a manner that becomes harmful to our health.
Yeah, no, that's a great point that I'm glad you guys both brought up. I know for me, the context of, because again, on the podcast, you've mentioned Chronometer several times, and Elizabeth actually being on those episodes with me, she started using it before I did. And a tipping point for me was when we were talking about micronutrients and just kind of trying to balance those. And we were talking about sports dietary supplements and talking through, okay, do I need to take a supplement? Well, if, you know, and you told us if you're kind of doing your nutrition right, you probably don't need to take a supplement. And so I downloaded Chronometer because I wanted to kind of take a look at my micros and see, okay, is there anything that I'm not getting enough of that I can maybe make some tweaks to my diet to not need different dietary supplements? And what I found when I started using Chronometer is that, you know, I honestly haven't even looked at the micronutrients yet because I found very quickly I have so many carbs in a day and I have such a lack of protein and fat in a day that I'm now just focusing on getting those three right and balancing the macros. And then I feel like once I get the macros a little bit better balanced, then I'll move on to looking at the micros. And then maybe after that, once I've kind of learned the lessons, maybe doing what you guys are suggesting and putting it away. So for folks that you know have kind of heard us over time talk about it, what are the primary nutrition trackers out there that you recommend athletes look at first?
So you've already mentioned probably the most common one that I use with my clients, but the other one that's very prevalent is one by MyFitnessPal. And then there's another app called Lose It that I know Elizabeth has mentioned that she's used in the past. And then there's always just the good old MyPlate app that is out there. I can't remember exactly what it's called. But at the end of the day, you know, I will tell you there is a plethora of them, and you need to find one that really works for what it is, you know, you want to achieve.
I love how, like, in addition to the apps, you also kind of mentioned, you know, just taking pictures of food and being mindful of that. And so, you know, that was one of the questions that I was going to kind of follow up with, and you've already touched on it a little bit, is, you know, for athletes that maybe don't want to use an app, you know, are there other resources that you would suggest for them to be mindful about what they're putting on their plate, but not necessarily tracking the specifics of the macros or the calories?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah, so one of the things that we've used over the years, and I know we implemented this back when I was with the United States Olympic Committee, and even going forward, I think groups like USA Triathlon have adopted it, but we've used a MyPlate that we have divided up into like easy days, moderate days, and then hard days. And I typically have my clients just put a rating of perceived exertion next to their workouts. And I'll say, you know, do it based on the workout that you're getting ready to do. If you're getting ready to do an RP of 7+, then make sure whatever you eat before, during, and after it matches that RPE, which is hard training. And so they can go after a plate model that actually helps them manipulate the caloric density, really, of their food intake just based on how hard they're working. It's a more simplistic approach. You can tell people, hey, you know, keep eating until you're on full. The biggest thing you have to just be cognizant of, and I know we've talked about this before, is that, you know, training can inhibit appetite. And so at the end of the day, you just want to make sure that over time you're not dropping weight just because you do feel full. But we can look towards an athlete's plate kind of model where we do it based on how hard you're training. And I think that's an easier way for many. Or you can come to someone like myself and they'll say, look, Krista, I just want a pattern. Help me develop, you know, 3 to 5, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner, you know, meals for the different intensities. Have helped me develop, you know, snacks at a certain caloric range and give me a nutrient timing pattern that I can follow and get everything in that I know I need to be getting in. So I think there's a variety of ways to get in what we need. We just need to, you know, be flexible and know when tracking is appropriate versus a more qualitative approach being appropriate.
So in getting started using a nutrition tracking app, my app took my weight, height, et cetera, and gave me a BMR, or a basal metabolic rate. Tell us what that means, and is the number of calories an app estimates for us accurate?
Yeah, so when you put in your information to the app, they are going to give you a basal metabolic rate that is dependent on whatever information you give them. And for the everyday person, typically it's pretty accurate. The thing about athletes is that if you have a higher level of lean body mass, it may underestimate your basal metabolic rate. And so the key really is to make sure that when you're using these apps, whether it's for weight loss or weight gain, that you don't ever let yourself drop below that basal metabolic rate. And I know at times there are equations when you're losing weight may do that, just because of the functions that they use in terms of estimating weight loss. But at the end of the day, for most people, it will be accurate as long as you choose the right activity factor as well. So I know for myself, when I choose my activity factor, I go in and say, okay, here's my height and weight, and I'm going to choose sedentary because it's going to take my basal metabolic rate and multiply that by 1.2 to give me my base caloric intake. And then I'm going to connect my activity monitor, my Garmin in this instance, to actually feed in whatever it is I'm burning for the day. And that's how I get my total caloric burn. That's how most people should be getting it. But on the whole, it's a relatively accurate means for us to understand at least how much we should on average be taking in comparison to what we put out.
I think that's a great thing just to kind of, you know, give people a better understanding of how some of those numbers are calculated and what they should be looking for in terms of how much to be fueling each day. What might be some warning signs that an athlete would not be fueling enough, even if they're kind of hitting what those recommended numbers were for calories or macronutrient percentages?
Yeah, so the biggest thing that we'll notice first and foremost is that they'll get so hungry that they end up eating well past those calories. They say, why am I so hungry? Why do I keep going over? That's one of the first things that I always notice. And typically that comes down to when they tell it that they want to lose weight. And interestingly enough, sometimes those apps will take you below the resting metabolic rate when it runs its equation. If you say, I want to lose 1 pound a day or 2 pounds a day, it says, okay, I need to lose 3,500 calories per pound that they want to lose. And so, unfortunately, sometimes that results in them going below the resting metabolic rate. And the first sign I get from everyone is that they end up overeating the estimated calories that it gives you. It also starts to disrupt sleep. And then as a result of both of those, we start to see a compromise in training. And if they can't train, then we know that we've taken a step in the wrong direction.
So one of the questions that I've come across very frequently with the athletes that I've been working with is, you know, can athletes have both? Can they fuel their bodies well enough to sustain like a half Ironman, Ironman training load while also losing weight?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the biggest thing is if they can accept the rate of weight loss that they can safely achieve by actually exercising off the weight that they want to lose, then they can get there. It's just oftentimes athletes turn around, they want to lose the weight so quickly, it's a I want it now mentality, that they won't accept the rate at which they need to lose weight. With my clients, I'll say, look, we're not going to lose more than a pound a week. And you might say, huh, that's kind of slow, Dr. Austin. I want it to lose 10 pounds this month. And then I'll say, well, you might want to go down the street because we don't do that here. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, that's the biggest thing I run into is that people want very quick results. And if they can accept that it's going to be a slow and steady process, that's what's going to allow them to actually maintain the quality of their training. I mean, oftentimes, if they're smart about it, they'll periodize their nutrition so that they lose that weight during the early part of the season so that they're not in the most intense components of their training when they're really hungry and more than likely to overeat if they put themselves in any caloric deficit. And so as a result, I say, let's do this early on, whatever you want to try and lose for the year. Even if it's 10 pounds, let's try to get this done in the first 3 months. And so that's what they have to realize is that periodization of weight loss is very crucial to doing it well and also training well for a half Ironman or Ironman.
So you referenced a moment ago, you know, our you know, chronometer in my case, you know, but whatever, if it's a quality app, it's going to give you that basal metabolic rate. And so you said that you kind of the optimum setting to put it on is to tell the app that you're sedentary and then allow your Garmin, your fitness tracker, to feed in how many calories you're burning for the day. So, you know, how can we adjust our caloric needs for exercise? Are we trying to replace all of the calories we burn in training, or are we trying to go over that, under that? What's kind of the best way to approach how many calories you're taking in versus how many calories you're burning?
So if you're trying to stay weight stable, we want to try and actually meet the calories that, you know, it sums up for us. And what's interesting for many athletes is that they find when they do that, that they're missing anywhere from 300 to 800 calories. And they go, oh, I didn't know I was burning that much. And so what I always encourage them to do is to slowly build up into the calories that it suggests, and they'll say, why am I staying the same body weight? I've actually, you know, eaten more, and it's just because they're suppressing their actual metabolism. Whereas if someone comes and says, hey, I want to lose weight, for the majority of us, unless we just have a horrific diet, we're going to have to end up exercising off those calories. Okay, a lot of people come to me and they are taking in their basal metabolic rate times 1.2. And I say, that's great. We got to hold on to that and make sure you don't lose it, because that's typically your highest level of energy expenditure. And then I say, let's take a look at what you can lose in the form of exercise each day. And a lot of people can lose about 500 calories each day if they spread it out correctly, especially if they're doing it as aerobic exercise that doesn't cost them too much in terms of intensity, or they're just careful with the amount of intensity that they put in, and then they will lose up to a pound a week. But I try to encourage them to do it from the exercise side of the coin rather than trying to restrict too much. Now, there are those athletes that when you take a look at what they're taking in versus what they're putting out, they're consuming maybe 1,000 calories more than what they actually need. And that's when they turn around to me and say, oh, is this that bad? And I said, well, it explains probably why you're putting on weight, and we should slowly taper those calories back so that you're in balance, and let's see how far just putting you in balance actually gets you. So that's one of the things I've done with many people over the years when they want to lose weight, is we take a look at that first and say, you know, by chance, are you just over consuming a lot of junk food? And just that in and of itself will start to pull the weight off. So we have to be careful, you know, as to which side we're going to pull it from. And it's very dependent on whether or not you're the person that's over consuming fuel, whether you're the person that is consuming just enough fuel, and you have to then turn around and exercise it off. So I think that's where that, you know, energy in versus energy out, you know, becomes very useful, because all of a sudden you kind of see, you know, where the glaring component actually is.
That's great. Yeah. How would you help athletes establish a goal for their body composition? For example, you know, how does an athlete know if they should lose weight maybe, or gain weight through some muscle mass, or that, you know, they should just maintain their current weight, but maybe just clean up their intake a little bit?
Yeah. So the first thing that I think as everyday people that we have to look at is, first and foremost, how is my overall health? You know, do I have good cardiometabolic health? Do I have good heart health? Do I, you know, what is my BMI? Okay, am I possibly obese and carrying too much body fat? And so for the everyday person, I actually do go down that road just initially to say, by any chance, are we possibly compromising our health? Now, once we've checked those boxes, then I turn around and say, okay, well, what are your training goals? And if your training is being met and accomplished, and you're at a healthy body weight, you're at a healthy body composition. And the way I define that is typically based on reproductive health. So we're in psychological health and bone density. So, you know, that way, you know, women are having their menstrual cycles, right, every month. People are sleeping well. Their sexual health is good, you know, which is important because that's how guys are going to judge, you know, those things. And if that's all intact, I say, well, let's stay here. You're hitting your workouts. And let's find out how well this body weight is working for you. And on the body composition side, we can go down and measure it. We can go get a DEXA. But the question is, do we really need to do that? Or can we just tell as we move along that, okay, we are leaning up. And are we hitting our workouts? Now, if that's not enough, and they say, well, what if I were 5 pounds lighter? Then I say, you know what? Let's choose some key workouts in each discipline. In the case of triathlon, it's swimming, biking, and running. And I want you to use these as test sets. And we'll lose the 5 pounds, but each of these tests needs to show a significant benefit because you did lose those 5 pounds, or you did drop body fat percent by anywhere from 2 to 5%. I use those types of markers to say, yes, we have in fact gone in the right direction. So I think it's a number of things that we need to take a look at to know if we should manipulate body weight and body composition. But I'll be transparent. When I have athletes that are going well and they're at a certain weight and body comp, I tend to leave it alone and hope that they can accept that and just make sure they come to the line well-fueled for every training session and getting the most out of themselves.
So the primary thing athletes will see tracking with each of their meals are the amounts of macronutrients that make up what we ate. What role does each of these three play in our bodies, and why is it important to get enough of all three?
So all three technically are fuel sources that the body will use based on exercise intensity. And really the two main ones are in fact fat or lipids and carbohydrate. Each of them also plays a key role in health, whether it's the amino acids, the protein that we take in, helping us to maintain lean body mass, or it's the role of carbohydrates in maintaining immune function so that we, you know, aren't compromised from, you know, the intense training that we're doing. Without any one of the macros, the others can actually become limited in many metabolic processes. So we have to realize that oftentimes the body doesn't work well if one is out of sync with the other. And so what I always recommend to athletes is to remember that, you know what, it's important to get all three because the three of them are dependent on each other. And I think if we remember that, you know, we tend to honor and respect each of the macronutrients.
Yeah, no, that definitely gives us a good way to look at the three, that they all work in harmony together, and that each one is limited in how much it can actually help you without the presence of the others. So I found, and I alluded to this earlier in the episode, very quickly when I started tracking, it was way harder than I thought it would be just to balance the three macros. And I getting carbs is very easy. Dr. Austin, there are things in my diet that I looked at that I thought were just super healthy, and they are healthy, but have more carbs than I thought. So for example, at lunch every day, my standard lunch for as long as I can remember is just some lean turkey sandwich meat with some carrots and an apple and something like Cheez-Its or pretzels or a nice little crunchy carb on the side. And in my mind, it was like, oh, there's some lean meat and I'm having a vegetable in the carrots. I'm having some fruit in the apple and I'm having some lean meat in the turkey. And I found that carrots have way more carbs than I thought they did. Apples have way more carbs than I thought they did. And so I walk away from that lunch and chronometer tells me, okay, you had a little lean protein and you had a lot of carbs. And so I'm learning, you know, on my own, hey, how to balance the three and trying to get more fat and more protein. So for anybody that's out there that's like me, that maybe they find themselves struggling to get enough fats in their day or get enough carbs in their day or get enough protein in their day, what are some of your suggestions for kind of each of the three in supplementing if you find yourself lacking in a certain area?
Yeah, so on the protein side, I try to highlight to people that you're going to get your most robust amino acid profile from items like lean steak, grilled chicken, and fish, especially like one like salmon. And then on the carb side, you know, you can go after ones like quinoa or lentils where you're going to have carbohydrates, but it will give you a slight amount of protein and fat as well. And then there are ones like baked potato or oatmeal that have other factors to them in terms of content that will give you something that's maybe a little bit more robust than, let's say, a Cheez-It per se. You know, putting a fruit and a vegetable is really important.
Here she is attacking Cheez-Its.
Yeah, well, you know, it's kind of interesting. I mean, sometimes people don't realize how much they're allotting to carbohydrates that we love. And even, you know, I love Cheez-Its too. But they go in and they consume so many of our caloric, you know, intake. And yeah. All of a sudden people turn around and they go, oh, I didn't know I had like 500 calories in Cheez-Its today. And if you look at... You know, I mean, that's kind of what I envision Andrew doing is sitting there with the box of Cheez-Its. And then they realized they had a whole bunch of carbs and fat and they forgot the protein. But at the end of the day, it's about finding the highest quality ones that we possibly can and making sure that those are our focus. And on the fat side, I'll tell you, I try to let it just come in naturally with other sources, whether it's from the meats I consume or the types of carbs or maybe, you know, what I'll put on my carbs. Like if I put on some avocado or I mix in olives into, you know, something that I'm having with the protein or, you know, the carbohydrates, maybe I mix it into a salad or putting nuts on the salad. I think that's oftentimes the easiest way for the fat to come into it. And then, you know, at times I tell people, look, you do sometimes find it easier to kind of supplement your diet. Sometimes things like protein powder makes for a much higher quality snack, like in a smoothie, especially if it can have something like MCT oil added into it to help give us the actual balance in protein and fat that we're looking for. And then I also go after our nuts and nut butters to help fulfill the fat content while also giving myself protein intake. And so that's, you know, the type of fuel we want to turn towards. I think what you'll notice about all of those is that for the most part, it's not processed foods. And I think that's one of the biggest things people can learn is that if you take a look at your intake and you're like, okay, how much of this is just processed foods or I had to go to a chain restaurant and pick it up, oftentimes you find that the quality you're consuming isn't quite what you thought it was.
Then the next kind of breakdown that we're likely to notice in these apps are the micronutrients. So once we've got the balance of the macros, what is the added value in getting the proper amount of those micronutrients?
Usually this should help us optimize our macro intake. You know, in other words, you might end up taking in more fruits and vegetables and more, you know, boxed foods from the grocery aisle. And it really holds us accountable for what we take in. This is where being accountable to ourselves, I think, and looking at the value of each food item, you know, what is it bringing to us helps us refine our nutritional intake. And so I'll give you an example from, you know, my nutritional intake that I know helps me is, you know, I'll take the app Chronometer, and people love to bring me something that they know I love for breakfast, which is an Asiago cheese bagel. But when I put that in, and I love them. I really do, but they're about 300 calories. And if I take a look at those 300 calories and I compare it to maybe the really good smoothie I could make with like some flaxseed milk that's going to give me a whole bunch of, you know, omega-3s, and, you know, a smoothie with, you know, a couple servings of fruit in it, maybe I put, you know, half a scoop or a scoop of protein powder in, and things that, you know, in a Greek yogurt, and I blend that up and I look at the nutritional content that's just in that smoothie for 300 calories, and I compare the two and I go, I love those Asiago cheese bagels, but in all reality, it's far better for me to have that smoothie. And so I think it's where I help myself get honest with the foods I love, but also balancing it with the foods I know I need to take in.
Is flaxseed milk your go-to type of milk for smoothies?
It's one of the ones that I will rotate over to when making smoothies, especially fruit smoothies, because it just helps me kind of keep some of the sugar content out, and it does give you the omega-3s. So it's something I've gravitated towards. I don't know if it's for everybody, but it seems to work for me.
So my nutrition tracker has a long list of vitamins, minerals, lipids, et cetera, that it breaks down in my nutrition report. And sometimes when I look at the list, it just seems impossible to get 100% of my targets for all of them. Are there certain micronutrients that you would advise us to focus on more so than others?
You know, there's no one that I would tell you to focus on. And honestly, we should be able to achieve them all. You know, maybe there's one or two that we can't get to if we're diligent with our nutrition. And the one endurance athletes tend to fall short on is actually iron, if they're not careful. And it's mainly because they require a good bit more of that nutrient than most other people. But on the whole, you know, the goal should be to improve the quality of your food intake so that you meet all those micronutrients. I mean, I can acknowledge that one or two of them might be low, but on the whole, we should be able to fill those bars and make sure that the quality of what we're taking in is appropriate.
So if we find ourselves, you know, maybe for days and weeks at a time, you know, lacking in some of the micros, we probably need to be examining the quality of each of the macros we're taking in. Is that right?
Absolutely. And you'd be amazed at how much that'll change your nutritional intake too.
So you did reference, you know, that it's okay to supplement maybe some of the certain micronutrients that you're just, you know, consistently not getting enough of. And we had a whole podcast with you on supplements, but at what point should an athlete maybe consider taking a supplement if they're not getting a certain micronutrient over time?
First and foremost, it should be because we need it to maintain our health. Okay, if there's something that we're missing and it's going to impact health, that's when we know we do have to pursue the use of a dietary supplement. Second, it might be to help us fulfill a goal intake, and again, that goes back to health. But third, sometimes, and this is where we just have to be honest, is that, you know, not everyone eats, you know, 100% dedicated to filling out those bars, right, in the micronutrients and what have you. And so they do it from the perspective of convenience in reaching the intake they need to be having. And so that's one of the things that we have to accept about nutrition, is that sometimes we can't be 100% perfect on that. And I'll give you, for example, just, you know, getting the right amino acid profile in. Oftentimes protein powder is something that I'll turn to. And really, these days it's produced as a food product. It has a nutrition facts label on it, but it's still a form of a supplement. And it's a good example of one that we may rotate in to help us achieve all of our amino acid profile that we want. While at the same time balancing the fact that we need to eat real food, get it from whole food sources, and knowing when to supplement. So it's one of those things we have to look at each of our situations and know when can we improve food intake and when do we need to turn to an actual supplement to fulfill everything we're looking at.
So diving a little bit deeper into some of the features of these apps, I know in some of the premium versions of them, such as Chronometer, like a timestamp can be added to each entry in your food diary. why would this be beneficial and kind of what considerations should we be making in the timing of our meals and snacks?
So when I use something like a timestamp from a nutrition app, oftentimes it's because I want to take a look at when an athlete is consuming the majority of their calories in relationship to when they're actually burning them. And oftentimes this helps many of the athletes I work with to minimize the caloric debt that they go into with the training that they do. So they'll go out and they'll burn 50 to 60% of their total daily energy expenditure by 12 p.m. in the middle of the day. And I said, well, you've only had, 700 calories by that point in time, and yet you've burned 3,000. Let's take a step back and kind of see how you can better distribute it. The other thing it will let you do in an app like Chronometer is take a look at what are you having at each of those time points. So I'll ask them to hit something like 20 grams of protein every 3 hours. And the question is, can they hit that every 3 hours throughout their 12-hour window typically that they're eating and getting all the protein that they need? We'll take a look at that. We'll also take a look at whether or not they're consuming adequate carbohydrate prior to a training session and whether or not they're refueling quick enough based on their actual training program. Are they getting enough carbohydrate in prior to maybe a second session or quick enough to help restore them prior to the next day's session? So I like looking at it for, those types of readings. The other thing that people have used it for is to help them with what's known as partitioning. And partitioning means putting in certain types of foods throughout the day to help you manipulate some physiological signal that your body's giving you with regards to food intake. So oftentimes this comes along the lines of weight loss, where we tell people to eat like a king in the morning at the meals, and then to eat like a pauper otherwise, because you actually want to taper back the caloric intake throughout the day. So with the clients that I have, we'll focus on more complex carbohydrates, early on in the day, and we'll tailor back towards fruits and vegetables later on in the day because they've done the burning of most of their calories up front. Conversely, you may have an athlete that has a very high caloric burn. They do get hungry when they're trying to lose weight, and they'll turn around and say, yeah, but by the time I reach, 7 o'clock at night, I've had all my calories, but I'm still hungry. How do I help mitigate some of the hunger that I'm experiencing? And I'll say, well, let's take your distribution and leave X amount of calories for dinner time and make it very, volumetric based, but substantive enough so that you don't get hungry before you go to bed. So there's a lot of benefits to taking aspects of apps and trying to use them from a timing scenario, whether it's the quality of what you're taking in, or it's actually helping you fulfill your overall goals of weight loss or hunger control.
Gosh, yeah, that's awesome. I mean, just one feature there in terms of a timestamp, and there's a lot of possible benefits to that and some very important things that we as athletes could consider.
I have a timestamp. I haven't really paid that close attention to it other than looking back and saying, what time did I have lunch again? Can I have a snack yet? So knowing that now that I'm empowered with kind of those strategies, it's definitely going to help.
So kind of shifting focus a little bit here. Some folks out there will incorporate scheduled fasting into their normal routine, whether it's fasting on a particular day or a particular meal from here to here. So I've kind of got two things with this. So from a performance standpoint, is there a benefit to incorporating fasted workout sessions? And then from kind of a nutritional tracking standpoint, how would those factor into kind of the caloric intake and expenditure equation?
Yeah, so to answer your first question, the benefits of fasted workout sessions are just very dependent on your goals. And I think we have some people out there that, they almost have to learn to function without anything so that when they do get into these prolonged endurance events and they are in an energy deficit, their body knows how to keep going. And so even at the elite level, sometimes we have to taper them back a little bit from eating so much prior to going into a training session so they know what it's like to do even easy training on empty, in essence. And there are benefits to it. It might result in a little bit more, you know, fat oxidation. It doesn't mean that you're going to get an increase in, you know, the capacity of the body to utilize fat as a fuel source. But for some people who need improved insulin regulation, who need improvements in just fat oxidation on the whole, instead of giving them oatmeal prior to, you know, the session, we might say go do it fasted, or we'll manipulate the macronutrient they have before it and say, you know, have some scrambled eggs or have some, you know, protein powder or something of that nature, so that they do get that differential oxidation in fat to carbohydrate to improve possibly what they've done in the past. So those are some of the benefits to fasted training. It's typically for those that, you know, really don't have that side to them. I mean, I know I had some athletes over the years, they'll drink a carbohydrate sports drink for even easy runs. And I'm like, why are you having that? And even if you go to the Gatorade Sports Science Institute, they'll be like, you're not supposed to drink that while you're doing a, you know, an easy run. And I know they've told myself and, you know, elite athletes I've taken there for their program, they're like, look, you need to learn to kind of run on empty a little bit and teach your body to cope with that. So there is a purpose to it. And then from a nutrition tracking standpoint, you know, the goal is to make sure that you fuel your body with the calories that you really do need. And so at the end of the day, just make sure you don't come up too short. If you're going to fast for, you know, 14 hours out of the day and only eat in 10, you know, just make sure over those 10 you achieve everything you need to achieve to make sure you stay producing good workouts. So it's not really about planning for it, but it's rather about making sure you get everything in. What you would see in an app that has a timestamp is that you just don't start eating until later in the day. Maybe you only eat from, you know, 8 until, you know, 6 at night, or from 10 until 5, and that's what your food log is going to reflect.
So drinking water is obviously something that adds zero calories, which is sometimes wonderful. It adds zero macros and it adds zero micros into our food diaries. Is there any additional benefit to tracking water intake?
Depends on the person. You know, I'll tell you that some people just don't like to drink water, and we're supposed to actually consume a certain amount every day to stay hydrated, you know, especially at meals. And so with my clients who say, I just don't like the way water tastes, or I don't like to drink fluids, that's when I will employ those aspects of an app to see if we can't hold them a little bit more accountable or get them engaged with how much they need to do hydration appropriately. Similarly, on the flip side of that, I have some that drink way too much water. And I'm like, why are you drinking this much water? And they say, well, I'm always thirsty. And I said, okay, well, that means that we're not balancing your fluids that have electrolytes in them, and we need to balance that instead of just drinking pure water. So sometimes it helps us find that ideal ratio of fluids that need to contain electrolytes, maybe even electrolytes and carbohydrates, and those that can be just water. So those are some of the key reasons to actually track it.
Yeah, no, that tracks with my experience, because I was somebody who definitely was a overwater drinker, and my daily trips to the bathroom would reflect that, and just starting to kind of look into why and how much I was drinking and seeing that it can have some negative impacts. I started just kind of mixing in, you know, some UCAN hydrate into some of those water bottles, and definitely have found the appropriate amount. So I'm glad I've kind of naturally done what you just advised everybody to do. And that's a great point. So let's maybe, Dr. Austin, kind of end the main set with this here. You know, for folks who really, you know, they get on, whether it's an app or just a personal diary, or working with a nutritionist, you know, what, once we get really consistent and kind of make this a daily habit, you know, and we can look back on, you know, the last couple, you know, days, weeks, months of what we've eaten and what we put into our bodies, what are some of the trend lines that we should be looking to improve upon once we kind of actually have data patterns over time?
Yeah, so when we take 3 to 7 day averages, and that's typically what I encourage athletes to do, what we want to see is a convergence on the number of calories being appropriate with regards to intake versus output, and the overall distribution of the macronutrients, and how well are we actually fulfilling now the micronutrients that we need. And oftentimes it's nice to have a visual to show you that you really are doing something that much better. And I think that's the benefit of it. I also use it with coaches so that they know where their athletes are at and, you know, the progress that they've made or maybe even that they have not made and where we're trying to get those athletes to. So over time, you should be able to see the changes take place and actually show yourself, you know what, I am achieving what I've set out to achieve. And that's the benefit of actual tracking, is that the changes should match, you know, performance changes. They should match your overall goals that you have for nutrition.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
4 hour cool down today, we have a great question that came in from one of our athletes after listening to episode 38, Nutrition Supplements for Performance, Fact or Fiction. Dr. Austin, one of the supplements we talked about on that episode was caffeine. And Kelly from Texas had a great follow-up question about the use of caffeine mid-race.
This is Kelly from Argyle, Texas, and I'd like to hear Dr. Austin's opinion on drinking energy drinks that they provide on the course during race days. You know, at Ironman sanctioned events, Red Bull is usually one of the bigger sponsors, and they're passing out samples at the packet pickup. Is there an advantage to consuming energy drinks such as Red Bull, say prior to a workout, prior to a race, and or during the race? And is there a strategic time of consuming these drinks?
You know, all of those products do have caffeine in them. It is a way to obtain caffeine during a race. I will say I'm going to direct people more so towards the Coke and the Red Bull, just because they do bear nutrition facts labels rather than a supplement facts label. That's what you will see on the 5 hour energy drink. And I think it's just a little bit safer to consume, you know, something that, you know, has a nutrition facts label. The supplements, you know, we like to see those batch tested before we utilize those. And we grab, you know, just about anything from an aid station that we know we can tolerate well. I never recommend to people, you know, trying something new on race day could be detrimental. But at the end of the day, all of those have, you know, acceptable caffeine levels that, you know, you could take in and definitely use it as a source of caffeine to help keep you going.
Now that's super interesting, because I always kind of had the mental impression that, like, I was totally down for the Coke on course, because I think Coke is just kind of a little bit more daily in our lives as people. But, you know, when you think of just that mental impression of grabbing a Red Bull, it's, oh, that's that energy drink. That's that, it's really going to spike me up. It's really going to jazz me up. And so to hear you say that it does have the nutrition facts label, and it is something that if you've drinking one and you know your body handles it well, yeah, absolutely go for it on race day. So I always kind of looked at the pros, right, who were sponsored by Red Bull and thought, oh, they're only doing that because they're sponsored. But it's cool to see that for a lot of people, that's actually a viable go-to drink on race day. Elizabeth, when you're out on the race course, do you find yourself kind of reaching for some of those drinks on race day?
So I actually have not ever done that, but it's something that I've talked with a number of the athletes that I've coached before. And even for some of them, you know, caffeine offers as much of a mental wake up as it does that physical boost. And
yes,
and we know that racing is both physically and mentally taxing. So, you know, as long as it's been practiced in training and we know the amount of caffeine consumed isn't going to lead to some GI distress, then I see that as a very viable way for athletes to maybe refocus, re-energize, and finish out to the finish line.
Yeah, I think the mental jolt kind of aspect of it, I know for me, is always certainly helpful. I mean, if I you know, take a little caffeine on a training run or in a workout on a race, it definitely, I definitely feel the impact. So folks, you heard straight from the expert. If you're on that race course and you know your body handles Red Bull, you know your body handles Coke well, that's a good go-to. You can do it, you can drink it, mix it in, and let it help you carry yourself to the finish line. Well, that's it for today, folks. I want to thank Dr. Krista Austin and pro triathlete Elizabeth James for talking about nutrition tracking with us today. Shout out to UCAN for partnering with us on today's episode. Head to UCAN.com to check out what superstarch products can fuel your training and racing. Enjoying the podcast? Have any topics or questions you want to hear us talk about? Head to tridot.com/podcast to send us an email or record your voice for the show. We'll do it all again soon. Until then, happy training.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.